It's almost like they're trying too hard. I know this is almost like my own rant. I think it's my turn to go off now. Like, oh, it Amber, you guys had your bubble. Like, I guess I'm up next. We are live, everybody. Everybody, thanks for tuning in again to another episode of Business Casual Basketball. We're here live. We're also on streaming platforms. So however you're listening to us today or watching, we thank you for your time. Excited to be back for episode 113. I have three awesome guests on hand here today. And I don't want to botch any information or names or anything here. So I'm going to let them go and introduce themselves. Amber, why don't you lead us off and just kind of tell the people about yourself?
Okay, I'm Amber Vickers, part of the Unwrap Sports Network, of course. Been there since December 2019, so it's almost my year anniversary for Unwrapped. It went by so quick.
I know. I'm having fun, ain't that right?
Yep. I talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder a lot. I have a podcast called Thunder Coast to Coast. I also go live on Twitter. Ladies First is my show. It's live tonight at 7 p.m. Central Time.
Nice. Oh, what about you, man? What's up with you?
I'm Owen Watterson at the QC Collective on Twitter. Just like Amber talks too much Thunder, I talk way too much about Charlotte sports, but it's even worse because even less people care. But it's okay. We still have fun, man. I do a podcast called Dosa OJ that, you know, if you're watching this, man, Dosa OJ is coming back. Just don't worry about it. Check it out. That's me.
Nice. What's up? I'm Jason. This is my second stream. I just joined Unwrap a couple days ago. So, you know, I'm really excited.
Getting into it quick and early, man.
Real quick. I'm a Bucks fan. I'm from Milwaukee. So I'm a Bucks fan. LeBron, my favorite player. I'm ready to start talking hoops.
Okay. I saw Amber had a little.
Yeah, I saw a little bit.
A Bucks fan, LeBron's favorite player. I've never heard that before.
I'm a Bucks fan. LeBron, my favorite player.
So when
LeBron leaves, it's just all Bucks.
It's all Bucks. All right, all Bucks.
All Bucks.
See you, Jason.
I like it. It's different.
Well, I'm glad to have all three of you here on the podcast today. The stream, it's going to be a fantastic time. We're in the pinnacle of the NBA season. Game 5 of the finals is tomorrow night. Kind of selfishly, but not really, want the season to continue. I want the Heat to be able to take this into another game and get to game 6 and have this continue here. It's been a great season. But on to the main course here. The first topic of the day I want to give this man a lot of credit is going to be Anthony Davis. He has been absolutely on a mission this postseason run, especially in the finals. I mean, I have a lot of numbers here that I saved on Twitter because I really just couldn't believe it. I had to let it all set in here. So just some numbers for you guys to kind of chew on here. Just looking at the finals, like just going in real specific to this series, he's shooting 61% from the field, 55% from three, and he has not missed a free throw. He's shooting 100% from the free throw line. So I want to open this up to everybody here. What have you made of AD's run here so far, and how do you think this affects him as it pertains to his legacy? He got shot a lot when he was in New Orleans. He took a lot of heat for those teams. People said he wasn't a winner. But I think it's clear now. AD's a winner. He's a gamer. He's here for real, y'all. So what are we thinking about what he's done so far this postseason?
Well, I'll get it started, man. Look, AD is – I don't think you can really argue – well, I guess you can't argue it. We can argue anything, especially on Twitter. Good Lord.
Right.
But in my opinion, AD is top five player in the world right now. The Lakers have two top five guys in the world, and I think people really underestimated just how good they were going to be together. A lot of people said Kawhi and Paul George were going to be better, but let's be honest, they were never even in the same stratosphere, not even close. And no. Paul George showed that way off P.
EG 13.
All love to my guy, though. I hope he gets right. But yeah. Back to AD, man. In regards to his legacy, yes, his first title. He hasn't been here yet. But I think the heat that he got, especially in New Orleans, was really unfair. He had one really good first round. Where I think they beat the Blazers right? They swept the Blazers, right? And when they
five games. Yeah.
And once they finally got DeMarcus Cousins too, they looked great until Boogie got hurt. Now you're starting to see AD finally with that other superstar, and here they are about to win a title. You know, no disrespect to the Miami Heat, but you know, there's a reason only LeBron has come back 3-1.
That's right. That's right. And just to shed a little more light on these numbers that we're looking at here, for this series, I mean, there's some shooting splits that I want to point out. 79% at the rim. That's not really a surprise because we figured with the size advantage he has over the entire, most of the Miami team here, that he's going to shoot very efficiently from the rim. But if you look at his shooting percentages from outside the paint, 51% from short mid, 49% from long mid, 50% overall from the mid range in general, even from the corner from three in the 40% range, true shooting percentage, 67%. So I'm just really surprised that he's been so hot from the mid and the three. Like, we all know he's going to dominate in the paint. I mean, he's a freaking cheat code. He's long, he's athletic, he's got all that going for him, but his shooting has been very key. And I think it's kind of opened up so many more opportunities for him. Now it's to the point where not even Bam can guard him because he has a face-up game. He can just pull up over. Even Bam doesn't have the length to stay kind of, you know, put his hand up where he can kind of block that shot or anything. So it's just really incredible to see what AD has done. And, like, what are we thinking for Finals MVP? Like, is he the guy right now? Does he have an edge over LeBron, even with that kind of game three little mishap there where he wasn't really himself?
So when it comes to AD, like me and Aaron was talking before the show, he has no weaknesses on offense or defense. So skill-wise, he already has the potential to be the greatest power forward to ever play the game of basketball. He already has that potential skill set-wise. Now what he needs the accolades. So what is this? This is just, you can't blame him for the Pelicans. He did not have a championship team around him. With DeMarcus Cousins, he had DeMarcus Cousins as the second best player. He got hurt, didn't even play in the playoffs. He went on with Jrue Holiday as the second best player. Jrue Holiday is a great player, but if we're trying to win an NBA championship against teams that have dynamic duos, you need a better player. So you can't blame him for that. Plus, he's a big man at the end of the day. There's not one – I can't name, probably besides Hakeem, another big man who's won by himself, won a championship by himself. So now he has LeBron. This is the – and for Finals MVP, he has a case. The first two games, dominant, historic, NBA-wise and Lakers-wise. The third
LeBron's game, averages are right there with him, though. Man.
That's just a challenge. I think LeBron is Finals MVP, but because I mean he leads the team in rebounds, points, assists, he's the most valuable player. But Anthony Davis has a case. Maybe game three put a little damper in that. And game four, offensively, it wasn't that good. Defense, he showed up, and in the clutch, he showed up. So Anthony Davis, obviously. I think future Hall of Famer, and I think we'll end up the best power forward of all time.
That's a bold claim, man, because we got some serious power forwards in the history of our game. But I definitely – he can do it. He can do it. Just a little more hardware. Like, he's going to be right there with the greats.
That's
for
all
sure.
All you need is accolades.
Absolutely. Like, I like how you pointed out his defense. Like, that's the key to the last game. That's what he wanted. He took it upon himself to DF Jimmy Butler, something else we talked about before the broadcast. He saw how Jimmy Butler was dominating the action, and he kind of told the team, he's like, I got this, guys. Like, LeBron thinks I should have been Defensive Player of the Year. I'm sure he thought he should have been Defensive Player of the Year. Why not let me take the number one option on Miami, shut him down, turn off their water so that other guys can't get going, like their spot-up shooters, their cutters, and things like that, because it runs through Jimmy, it runs through Bam. So if Jimmy's out of the action, then it makes things a lot more difficult, as we saw the other night. It just wasn't the same Heat offense that we're accustomed to seeing for multiple points of the game. So,
AD, for me, I've always had a problem. Every time AD hits the floor, I cringe. And I'm probably not the only person that feels that way. His performance in game three, somebody on Twitter, I don't like people make excuses for when people lose. Miami won game three. Let's just get that out the way.
Lakers didn't play well,
but Miami won game three. Mm-hmm. And the reason why AD got in foul trouble is because of Eric Spoelstra. Eric Spoelstra put him in some situations. I know I had Anthony Davis as my Defensive Player of the Year as well. But Eric Spoelstra put him in some peculiar situations if you watch their game. The Miami Heat started doing something in game three they really weren't doing in game two, one and two. They were cutting. They set that high pick, you know, Hero and Duncan Robinson. We used to run it in college, actually. And those shooters would come off. And if you trail or if you hedge just a little bit, that shooter has that back door. Or that post guy can slip back door. That's where Miami was starting to get their engine running. They were moving more on offense. AD can move, but when you ask him to move with the guards on a perimeter like other guards, it becomes tougher because he's a bigger guy.
Sure.
So you're asking him to do the job of KCP, Danny Green, Rondo, and AC, and that's where he kind of got in that foul trouble a little bit. Just those little ticky-tack fouls add up. I think Frank Vogel made the adjustment in Game 4, and that's why we saw what Anthony Davis was able to do on the defensive end in Game 4. I know that people like to make excuses for why people lose. They was like, oh, well, AD was in foul trouble. Jimmy Butler just had one of those games, and I knew Miami would get one or two. I think Miami might get this one tonight. Don't call me crazy. I know they're playing in the Kobe uniforms, okay, guys? I know.
That's not a good sign for Miami.
I know, but on Friday, I'm like, okay, Miami, I want you to get one more. I just want you to get one more. But I like what Eric Spoelstra did. Eric Spoelstra made adjustments. That's why these games were a lot closer. Because, you know, the first game, it was kind of like, whoo, this doesn't look good. The second game, you're kind of like, whoo.
Second game is just like, yeah.
And then the third game, you're like, okay, Miami. And then the fourth game, you're like, okay, Miami. So the adjustments that Eric Spoelstra has made put Anthony Davis in those situations. Then Frank Vogel made other adjustments and helped Anthony Davis show his strengths. So for me, I really liked Anthony Davis for Finals MVP. I did. And then he had that Game 3 and I was like, ah. But I do think that Anthony Davis is probably the most valuable player because he gives them in the finals because he's locking up on defense. Because Jimmy Butler is giving it to everybody else whoever.
Straight up. No one else.
Giving it to everybody else. So when Anthony Davis took that assignment, I was like, okay, AD. And then his efficiency on offense. So efficiency on defense, efficiency of offense is why I really had AD as the Finals MVP. I think LeBron might get it. But if you ask LeBron, he would probably give it to Anthony Davis.
I agree.
If you asked either one of them, they'd give it to the other.
Yeah, that's who they are.
They love each other so much. You know?
And it's good. And it's good that Eric Spoelstra is finally getting credit.
It's about time.
Their coach.
Yeah, it's about time. I've been saying that for a long time, man. Yeah. Even with the Heat, just because he had LeBron, Wade, Bosh, a lot of people don't realize how long he's been with the Heat since really they became a franchise. He worked his way up, and he's been one of the best head coaches in the league for a long time now, regardless of whether people want to acknowledge it or not.
A lot of coaches can't coach 3 superstars either. That's difficult.
Exactly.
And because you look at the Clippers, just because you got a superstar roster does not mean that you can coach those guys. Those guys have to want to be coached and have to warrant the respect from you. And I think that works both ways. And I really love Eric Spoelstra. I really do. Miami was my dark horse. I made it to the finals. I was very happy. So,
hey, I read the rookie. I didn't see that coming at all. But I want to haul up on the Heat, talk a little bit. That's going to be our second topic. But going back to AD for a second, I think it's important you pointed out his defense, because when you look at most valuable player, historically, yeah, it's going to go to the guys that are the biggest stats. Like, you know, if you have, crazy stat line and you win, that's the key. Like, you know, I want to say if you win, because of course LeBron dominated in 15, but he didn't get Finals MVP. Gave it to Iguodala because defense. So that may be an asset of his game that allows him to get over the hump because he's been such a force in the defensive end. And maybe he did get Rockford Defensive Player of the Year because, you know, it's all great that there's rim protectors that have an amazing impact on the game. But when you have someone like AD that can guard just about anybody, regardless if they're in the paint or the perimeter, that's huge for your defense. Like, it's almost like you have no weak spots at that point. You know, he can cover up a lot of your sins on that end. So, I mean, that's a good argument to have. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think who I had for Defensive Player of the Year. Like, I'm not sure if I had – I want to say I had Davis, but that's a good case you made for him.
I had AD in the preseason. I still think he should have won it, honestly, over Giannis. I don't really think Giannis I guess the playoff bias is kind of taking over a little bit. I don't think he deserves to be only the third player to have MVP and Defensive Player of the Year 1 year. That's just me. But yeah, AD was my preseason pick. Still think he should have deserved it, and he's showing his worth now in the finals and throughout this whole bubble, really.
See, I think Giannis did deserve MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, but I think Anthony Davis also. I believe Giannis deserved it, but I also believe LeBron deserved it. It was a toss-up. Defensive player of the year. I believe Giannis deserved it.
Yeah, they both were toss-ups. I'll give you that. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I was happy either way, me personally. I was happy either way.
And I mean, you can't, like, discredit what they've done because of their postseason. Like, I get what you're saying, Owen. Like, the way that he finished the season definitely leaves a sour taste in your mouth.
It's just hard for that not to affect how I feel about that accolade, right? It's just Dirk winning MVP, and he got knocked out of the play. I forget which round he got knocked out in the playoffs that year, but pretty early. And it, he said in interviews that it felt empty to him, that the championship fulfilled him way more than that MVP ever did. So,
yeah. You know, so maybe it brings up the discussion of changing how we evaluate the MVP. I mean, this is kind of like all off topic. It is an age old question. But I totally get what you're saying. It's totally valid. But if we're looking at what AD has done, like in the sphere of maybe historically, like I have another stat for you here, guys. Like I just came ready with the stats. Like Twitter is just a great place when you want to go in and dive in. You want to find some numbers. Like literally, like this is how good he's been. All I did was type in Anthony Davis in the search bar. That's all I did. And I just started scrolling and the numbers were everywhere. So, I mean, that should go to show you how dominant he's been. But, well, LeBron too, but Anthony Davis has a better 2-point field goal percentage. So just strictly 2-pointers in this finals than Shaq had in 5 of his 6 finals appearances. Shaq. That's some dope company right there. Like, so is that another case for him getting finals MVP? Like, if he were to go to the voters, if he could, like, make a case, like, here, like, I'm sure better than Shaq in this thing. Like, so, you know, am I deserving? It's just something else to think about. But it really is incredible.
I don't know if that makes him, you know what I'm saying, the finals MVP, but that does show how dominant he is and how scary everybody else should be, especially next year, because he's only 27. He just entering his prime, the tip top. Yeah. So we go see.
It's wild. Like,
and sometimes you need that guy that has won before to bring that out of you. Like when LeBron went to Miami, he needed D-Wade to bring that out of him. If you look at Anthony Davis, like I said before, when he would hit the floor, he missed 3 or 4 games. Now he hits the floor. Now LeBron goes over there and kind of looks at him like, I'm gonna need for you to get up. Like, come on, get up. Let's go. We got a championship to win. So, you know, when he hit the floor, he had that scary fall. I think somebody, was it Alex Caruso, hit him and he was in the backcourt. And I was like, oh my goodness. He was limping and he was just down. And LeBron had this look on his face where we're like, okay, AD, like, I can't have this. It was a close game with the Miami Heat and game 4. I can't have this, AD, because one can't win without the other. I think the way that roster's constructed with LA, the others have really stepped up. I'm pretty sure we'll talk about that. The others are the reason why they're up 3-1, in my opinion, because you can cancel AD and LeBron out. You know what they're going to give you. But LeBron needs AD. AD needs LeBron. They both have said it, because if LeBron's having an off game, like LeBron had an off first half, it was just awkward. I think he had 5 turnovers in the first half. Very un-LeBron-like.
Yeah, very uncharacteristic.
If he doesn't have Anthony Davis on defense, he's going to have to guard Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
Because, and that's a lot of, that's a lot. That's a lot to ask of him in year 17. So I think they feed off each other very well. I thought that him and Boogie Cousins fed off each other very well. And then you add Drew Holiday, and then you had Rondo. So there's a reason why the Lakers signed Rondo. I really like Rondo. I'm a huge Rondo fan. If they can keep that team together, I'm trying to – it's hard to win back-to-backs in the NBA, especially with the talent shifting. The talent shifts probably every 3 or 4 years. Yeah, all like – so that core, Anthony Davis and LeBron James, is a pretty good core. And, you know, the Lakers will spend money. They will spend it.
LA, like, that's what they do.
They'll spend it. So –
they won't have to convince people very hard to come join them either.
We're LA. All right,
we're LA. I'm out. Like Miami. We're that's Miami. It. Come on, you know, so that core, I think if those two guys can stay together, I think they could probably get to a 3, maybe, but it's hard to go back to back. It's just so difficult because of the talent shift. Everybody moves. So we'll see. But they feed off each other, in my opinion. They feed off each other.
And to expand on that point a little bit, Amber, we look at the role players, and you mentioned this just a minute ago. I think they're feeding off of LeBron and AD too, because you look at the attention that AD draws. You look at the playmaking of LeBron, everybody's game has been enhanced, and this plays the same way over in Miami with Jimmy Butler and those guys. So, I mean, role players, they feed off of the stars, right? So it's like they don't have the ability to maybe create their own shot. They don't have the ability to maybe finish, or don't have the ability to shoot, or whatever the case may be. So when they're paired up with guys like that, make their job so much easier. So Rondo can just say like, okay, I'm going to take the occasional three. I'm going to drive. I'm going to set guys up. I mean, you know, Kuzma, I can just spot up and, you know, play off of those guys a little bit. Dwight, I can just rebound. I can just play some D. Like, if the game is so simplified for those guys, I think that's why they're doing so well. With the exception of Danny Green. I mean, I don't want to like trash Danny Green anymore. Like, he's been training every game for the wrong reason. So, you know, we can leave that guy alone for this one. But most of the team has been very good. Caruso, I mean, everybody, like, I give them props. Specifically Rondo and Dwight. It's kind of like the redemption tour. It's a revival of sorts for them. They've redeemed not just themselves on the court, but off the court. They've been very compliant. They haven't had a lot of issues with that. So I give them a lot of props. Like, the Lakers role players have surprised me. I
talked a lot of trash about their role players, especially before the playoffs started. A lot of people, especially with the Clippers, that's why a lot of people had the Clippers beating them, is because of the depth, the bench, the role players. And like you said, as soon as the bubble started, and especially in these finals, they've absolutely made a difference.
Absolutely. Incredibly huge difference. And it doesn't always have to be the big things. It could be the small plays. It can be KCP, you know, a dagger three at the end of the game. You know, we saw what he did last game. Like, KCP has really surprised me. Like, he can be hit and miss, but like, as a Heat fan, like, I was heartbroken several times because I'm like, okay, we're down by four. We're down by five. It's 2 minutes left. We have a chance. KCP says, nah, this corner three, that's a dagger.
Would be saying dagger.
Nope, that's not the guy I had in mind. Although AD did have one of his own, that step back three. God, like another reason why he's a cheat code. Like, step back three from a guy like that, that shouldn't be possible.
Okay, so I have a question about the Lakers that I don't see enough people talking about. I don't want to take away from their run this year in this bubble, this championship that I think we can all agree that they should win at this point. Only one other team is choked. But regardless, how long from now is LeBron's first year really taking a step back? Because it can't be that far away. Father Time catches up to everybody. And when that happens, they're going to have a lot more help around AD, because they're going to transition to LeBron, maybe not attacking as much. Maybe they keep him at point guard, and all he does is really facilitate, especially for AD, make other guys better. But he's going to take a step back eventually. And year 17, it can't be more than a few years away.
It's around the corner. It's a good question. But I think that's the benefit of having a guy like Anthony Davis at his side. So if the regression does come, I don't think it'll happen all at once. I think we'll see some slides and some statistics. But like we just said, AD's 27. He hasn't reached his highest peak yet, at least, you know, not judging off of his age. So that allows him, they kind of shift places. So if LeBron's here, Davis is here, they just shift a little bit. So AD takes some more of the pressure off of him. Defensively, he's got what it takes to take some of that pressure off.
I didn't think about it that way.
See, I think the Lakers need more next year anyway.
Golden State's coming back, man.
That's what I'm saying.
West ain't no joke.
Things are going to be better. The Nets, like, I'm not – listen, the Nets, for me, can make the NBA Finals. Like, when you they almost made it this year. And when you bring back Kyrie – and, yes, Kevin Durant's coming off an Achilles injury, but he's a jump shooter. It's not like he's some explosive, athletic finisher, Derrick Rose or Russell Westbrook. He's a jump shooter. So – the first year, he might not be completely Kevin Durant, but you can expect him to. And they're going to need more help regardless, honestly. They're going to need more help regardless.
That's why I said Rob Pelinka is going to have to – they're going to have to spend their money. They're not going to be shy about doing it, because, look, Miami's going to be a year older, year wiser. They're probably going to get Oladipo. I'm going to call it now. They're probably going to get Oladipo.
I like that call, Amber. That's a good one.
They're going to get better. The Nets are going to be the Nets. Toronto still stays intact. I hope Fred VanVleet does not leave. Please don't leave, Fred. Boston, hopefully Kemba can be completely healthy. And then the Bucks, I don't know what's going to go on with the Bucks. But the East is not bad when you look at it now. It's not so bad.
This last talent shift that we were just talking about earlier has probably been the best one in a while. It's there's a lot of parity across the NBA. It feels like for the first time in a long time. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell you who's going to win the title next year. Giannis coming back, meaner, stronger. The Nets, Miami coming back a year older. The Lakers, the Clippers, Golden State. There are contenders everywhere.
Lee,
Denver. You can't Denver, count out the Rockets.
Yeah. Utah, I mean, it's getting a year older. I mean,
Phoenix went 8-0 in the bubble. Phoenix. I'm just saying.
The West.
Compare Phoenix going 8-0 to the bubble to the teams I just brought up.
I'm just saying, it's momentum.
It's not a direct correlation, but maybe a little bit.
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time-consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
But guys, that's a great time to transition into our second topic. We're talking about a little bit about, you see it on Twitter, Executive of the Year was just announced today. So Amber, I know you got some thoughts on that. I can kind of see that you're not in agreement with that. Clippers GM, I think it was Lawrence Frank, won the award this year. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk going on about what should be included when we vote for these guys. Should it be off-season? Should it be in-season? Should it be both? I want to present the question to everybody. Was Pat Riley robbed of an award on that front? Like, if we're judging in-season, he has to get a lot of credit for that trade to get Jay Crowder and Iguodala. Like, that was to trade off a guy that wasn't playing. Like, Justice Winslow was hurt, like, almost the entire season up to that point. So he traded him away. He traded away a bad contract, James Johnson, to Timberwolves. So he got rid of a guy that doesn't play, a guy that has a terrible contract. Well, you know, maybe not the worst, but definitely not positive value, to get two valuable contributors that brought you to the finals. So if we're looking at in-season moves, were there any better in the NBA than that? Like, I know Marcus Morris was a good one, but I don't know. He might have made one of the best trades in the league at the trade deadline.
I think, listen, I hate bringing the postseason back into this, and I'm not going to. I'll kind of talk about both a little bit. If we're just basing it off a regular season, yes, I forget the Clippers GM's name. Yes, he deserves to be up there. I was just looking at it before we started. He deserves to be up there, but even just based off of what happened before the regular season started and then how the regular season ended, there were a lot of guys that did a lot better. Like Paul George, I feel like they gave up about as much for Paul George as the Lakers did for Anthony Davis. Again, that Pat Riley trade that brought them Jay Crowder, a lot of people were giving them flack for getting rid of Justice Winslow. I think it worked out seamlessly. Pat Riley deserved to be in the conversation. While I understand why it went to the Clippers, it brings back the conversation of voting the way they vote needs to be changed, because an owner is not judging his GM's performance based off how he performs in the regular season ever. So why are we judging them off of that? You know what I'm saying?
That's a good point. So Amber, is that kind of why you're kind of, you know, rolling your eyes at this decision? Like, is it the voting process? Is it the criteria? Like, what's the issue with this?
I thought Sam Presti just committed highway robbery for the – we stole the
Clippers. I didn't even bring up Presti.
We stole the Clippers future, and we were the fifth seed in the West this year, and we were projected to finish 13th. We had a 0.2% chance of making the playoffs. My two executives of the year, you could have went to Pat Riley or Sam Presti, in my opinion, either one of those guys. And the way – I had the Clippers win the finals, so this is going to sound just completely awkward.
I think we all did. So
I'm not too off. Oh, well, of course not you.
I got the Jordan jersey behind me, man.
It's okay. But I thought that Lawrence Frank did a great job getting all that talent together, but he gave up his future for the next, 5 to 6 years.
If Paul George or Kawhi decide to leave, mm-hmm. Kawhi's contract is up after next season. If he decides to say bye because they don't win a title, they're screwed.
Yeah. But they could get – no, they can't trade him because he can just walk off on his own. Never mind. So Sam Presti did an amazing job with that team this year. Pat Riley did an amazing job with Miami this year. So that was with my two. I'm probably going to talk about it on my show a little bit. But I just scratched my head when I woke up. I woke up from my nap and I said, Lawrence Frank, like, really?
Yeah, to like,
what did he do? Besides, I mean, he gave away his future. He gave a lot of his future away for someone that
proved they are not a superstar.
I like Paul George. I have a soft spot for him, but
yeah, he's so talented, but dang it, Paul George.
When you just put it all together.
Yeah, it's just it didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand that. I thought it should have been Pat Riley or Sam Presti personally, but you know.
I feel that. Like what you got, Jason? How you feel about that?
No, I was just gonna say that I agree with Amber, like 100%. Like I believe it was I believe Sam Presti should have gotten it because you gotta understand. They're in the West. They weren't even projected to be nowhere near the playoffs in the West. Trade away everything for Chris Paul. You trade away your whole core basically for Chris Paul to come in and Shai Alexander to come in and be your basically really your two best players. And you not only do you get to the playoffs, I think they had the same record as the Rockets and took the Rockets. Yeah. Seven games.
One Dort three away from knocking them out.
I get Pat Riley because if he would have got it, I wouldn't have been upset because obviously you see they made it to the finals, even though the Heat, I thought the Heat could give the Bucks trouble. I thought them and the Raptors were the only two teams that could really get the Bucks trouble in the playoffs. But I do believe Sam Presti deserved it. Pat Riley second.
So let's think about this, guys. All the examples we've given for a particular person to win executive of the year were how the team performed. So when the voters go and they're making their vote, are they judging these guys off of how their teams performed? Or here's what I'm thinking. They're just looking at the moves they made in a vacuum. They're not looking at how the moves influenced their teams and how they drove their teams. They're just saying like, oh, who made the best signing? Oh, he got Paul George. He got Kawhi. He wins. I think that's all they're looking at. It has to be, right?
It shouldn't be.
That's so surface level, and that's why it seems like every year when these awards start coming out, all of them, from MVP all the way down to the Executive of the Year, like there's always eye rolls about almost each and every one because it goes back to the same conversation. Voting and the way they vote matters, and it's just flawed right now.
Very much so. And you made the moves. But look what you gave up to a team that, even though OKC lost in the first round, I think they outperformed the Clippers because of the Clippers, what the hierarchy that the people put the Clippers on.
Mm-hmm.
And you had OKC down here. The Clippers darn near lost to the Mavericks.
And no, then – have an injury or
– Yeah.
Porzingis.
You blow a 3-1 lead to the Denver Nuggets. Really?
If Porzingis was healthy that whole series, it wouldn't have surprised me if they won.
Yeah. Exactly. And then OKC pushes the Rockets to 7 games. Shai didn't play well at all in that series, and they still pushed the Rockets to 7. Yeah. So, and a lot of people said, oh, I think if the Rockets could get the Lakers in the second round, they might, you know, beat the Lakers and, you know, whatever. But
I was one of those people. I got to apologize for that take.
Hey, listen. So we're all apologizing.
Was that aimed at me, Amber?
No. I'm just my buddy on my podcast, he said, man, I think the Rockets could give the Lakers problems. I'm like, I looked at it. And I'm like,
some shrapnel, I guess.
Yeah, it's okay. And my buddy said, I told my buddy, man, how are they going to handle AD? PJ Tucker, I said, how are they going to handle AD? PJ Tucker and Steven Adams are not the same player. I'm just saying.
Right. But this is all a great exercise in how the bubble has been a unique scenario and how it's affected people in different ways. Cause we all had these picks. We had the Clippers, we had the Bucks, you know, we had whoever, the Rockets. It's not worked out, but I don't think it should be an indictment or like, you know, a shot on like how we evaluate basketball. Cause I was reading this really good piece by Ben Falk that runs Cleaning the Glass earlier. It was called, I think, like the bubble experience or something about the bubble. And he was saying like the bubble has created some unique circumstances that have impacted teams in maybe ways that it would not have if we had a normal season. So, I mean, I don't want to use that to take away from anybody's performance. Like everybody's been fantastic that's gotten to this point, but it's just something to think about. So I don't think we should beat ourselves up for takes or whatever that we had. because it's a different year. Things have turned out differently than we would have expected. So,
yeah, I'm sure I'm not the only one in this group that thinks this, but before this bubble started, I know all of you were skeptical too, but the basketball that has been played I don't want to say up into the finals. I just haven't been as into the finals. I know a lot of people have said that as the rest of the playoffs, but pretty much from top to bottom, the level of basketball that has been played has been outstanding. It's the effort, the intensity is so much more than I expected. And the camera angles are to die for. I want those camera angles every year.
You even like the sideline angles?
It's just stuff we don't get to see all the time. I feel like I'm there. If I could watch that broadcast every game, I'd never go to another game.
It brought back 2000s basketball, because 2000s basketball, they used to have those sideline camera angles. I remember watching as a kid. So
it's just the things they can do with no fans there are awesome.
It's awesome. Yeah.
It's been phenomenal. Like, the play has been great, but I think, Owen, to speak to your experience with the finals so far, I felt that too. Because, you know, the fans are not there, you know, you don't have – it's an environment. It's like the whole atmosphere.
Yeah, it's just like it was this big buildup, all these great series, and then it's –
And then it's like, yeah, no cheers or whatever. It's just like, you know, you just hear squeaks of the sneakers and stuff. You're just like, I mean, this is cool, but it's not the same, you know.
Especially if they were – if they actually – like went to LA and Miami.
Oh my god, the fan with LeBron, the storylines. Oh my god,
that was just insane.
I also think it's 2-2 right now. If there were fans,
ooh,
quite possibly. Miami fans are amazing.
I say that, but almost every series would be at least a little different if there were fans there. So,
Yeah, because. I know LeBron was saying, we feed off our fans. You know, when they score a bucket and they're pointing to the crowd, we know how they talking to the crowd. I'm like, who are you guys talking to? My mom says, who are they talking to? Nobody's there. You got
family members, right?
Like, who are you guys talking to? It's so funny to see them kind of, they're so used to having people there that they automatically just, you know, talk to whoever they're talking to. I don't know.
They're going to pop themselves up somehow, right? They don't have a global atmosphere, so it's like maybe they're not talking to no one, but it helps them get the moment a little bit more.
So. It's so hilarious. It's so funny to me, but I really like the aspect of the bubble. It's hard for the NFL to adopt that. It's very difficult because you just have more players. I'm wondering what they're going to do for next season. Like, I wonder what they're going to do for next season.
The players aren't going to go for a whole season in that bubble again. I just don't think that'll happen.
Yeah.
No, I think we're looking at a situation where you have maybe limited capacity or something like that. Because the NBA has said, like, I don't think they're going to go back until they can have people back in those seats again. That's the number one priority. So I think
financially, it's just killing not just these teams, but the NBA as a whole and all these sports. I know the NFL is hurting. MLB is just stupid. I don't even want to talk about the MLB.
we'll let them live this time. But, like, we've talked about the Lakers so much and, like, what they've been doing so far. Like, when it comes to the executive of the year conversation, here's what's interesting part. Pelinka finished seventh. He didn't even finish in the top three or
five. That's a joke, man.
So it's absolutely incredible. So, like, what's the criteria for that? Like, how do they judge him? Like, he got –
That's just the Rob Pelinka hate. That's just the Rob Pelinka hate. Everybody just
loves that. That's an absolute joke.
I guess so, because wasn't he like since he was?
They went from not making the playoffs last year. They made one trade and they're about to win the NBA Finals. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. So I'm thinking about that, and it shocked me because I was on Twitter, and you know it's Anthony Davis reacting to Pelinka finishing. It says seventh, and he says, "Great GM, great exec." We know, I know, the organization knows the work he's put in to put this team together, to build this team could be for a championship. So, like, yeah, he was saying, like, he's deserving. Look what he's done. So finishing seventh, I think the only explanation is people had it out for him. Like,
and again, even if you go off that regular season only basis, they were the first seed in the West.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah. So how is he not?
I think it's LeBron hate. I think that might have a lot to do with it, because as much as people say they like LeBron, I know a lot of these execs really don't like LeBron, and I'm trying to figure that out, you know, why that is. I know LeBron has his moments where he trolls and things like that, but that's just LeBron.
LeBron puts fans in every team stadium.
Exactly. Exactly. And people just don't. like LeBron. It's a lot of fake love for LeBron, I think, is out there.
You know, Amber, I have been waiting to talk about this with somebody for a minute. I'm glad you brought it up.
Let's get started in here, guys.
This LeBron James hate. I'm so sick of it, man. I'm absolutely sick of it.
Oh, okay, man.
Look, whether you think Jordan is the GOAT, whether you think LeBron is the GOAT, whether you think Brian Scalabrine is GOAT, I don't care. Okay. This dude is a top three, at the very least, basketball player of all time. 100%. Those guys don't just fall off of trees. And all you want to do is sit here and hate on them. Like, enjoy it. The amount of talent that is in this league right now is unparalleled to any other era ever. Ever.
I'm with you.
Across the board. And I'm just so sick of the scapegoat. People on Twitter just blow my mind with the LeBron hate.
Unreal, man.
I'm done with it, man. I'm done. Just appreciate greatness while it's here.
That's all we ask for. You don't have to love him. Just give him the credit he's due.
See, I know why.
I
know why executives don't like LeBron. It's because it goes back to 2010 when he shifted the landscape of the NBA and put the power into the players and basically set the precedent for, I can control my own future. I can control my own destiny. I can control my own narrative.
You're onto something.
Once he did that, of course, the executives like, wait. That's never been done before. Players didn't do that. Free agency was not how it is now. And that all started in 2010 with LeBron James going to Miami.
The decision. Right. Watching that back is so cringy.
I think that shows that the evolution of business basketball, because you have to look at everything as a business. Basketball is a business. Football is a business. Baseball is a business. It's running like a business. Mm-hmm. And these so-called owners see you as a product. I talked about this on my show a little bit. Kind of got a little passionate. These owners see you as a product. So if your product puts a muzzle on your mouth and says, hey, I'm going to do what I want to do, and you're not going to stop me, then what does that say? Because LeBron does a lot. If I am the entertainment and all you are is a guy that writes the checks, who do people want to see? People want to see me. I'm taking advantage of that. Right. Him and Dwayne Wade had a whole off-season tour, and I loved it. I watched every minute of it, I'm telling you. I loved it. But he has put the power in players' hands. Rich Paul has also put the power in players' hands.
Yeah, people don't talk about Rich Paul's involvement enough.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see these men say, hey, I can control what I want to do. And you can't tell me nothing, because there's an owner that will sign me. There's a team that will say, hey, we'll give you what you want. And anytime LeBron goes to a team, guess what he does? He gets what he wants.
Every time. And always will, as long as he's playing in the NBA.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it comes down to his performance, too. Like, here's the other thing I was thinking about. Like, think of how many times a team has come up to challenge him. So whether it's the Pacers, whether it's the Raptors of years past, whether it's any of these Western Conference teams, think about how many franchises, how many execs, how many fantastic rosters have been humiliated. LeBronto is absolutely just demolished. Teams have been broken up because of him. Like, that could play a part too. Like, they've broken up he's broken up their teams. He's cost them a chance at a championship. Like, he's done a lot of destruction to these teams, like title odds, and some of them haven't come back since.
Yeah, because if you're thinking about winning a championship, the main guy that has to be in your head is, okay, how am I going to beat LeBron James? You know, obviously, if you're in a different conference, but even if you're in the West and the East, whatever, you're going to have to play him at some point to make it to the NBA Finals or win it. Yeah, that's a good point, Jason. I really haven't thought about it like that. Mm-hmm. Wow. This is great, guys. This is great.
It's also, I'm going to say this, it's also a black man doing things that people don't like. Like Kyrie. Kyrie says a lot of things, and people are like, oh, I don't agree with Kyrie. Kyrie's a smart, strong voice, and he's black. People don't like that. Yes. People don't like when you shake the boat. Kyrie's a very deep thinker. A very, 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 very deep thinker. And a lot of people don't think the way that he thinks. So when people don't like the way you think, they think you're weird. So when Kyrie says what he says, and then some of that, you know, when people are saying we owe Kyrie an apology, when the players took a break. They should have just not played, but that's neither here nor there. If they really wanted to make a social justice sacrifice, they didn't sacrifice much. If when he said what he said, and then people are like, darn. Colin Kaepernick is the same way. I don't want to kind of get off topic. I'm going to say this. Colin Kaepernick did what he did, and people hated him for it. The same people that hated him for it, 4 years later, they were like, oh, we see it now. Well, duh, we've been living this for as long as we've been alive. Well, we've been in existence. So don't ridicule these players for doing what's best for them when they are the talent. They are the talent. We're not paying to see a GM. We're paying to see LeBron. We're paying to see KD, Steph.
And I think LeBron,
they want to control their careers. I don't have a problem with that.
I think LeBron's rise in the time period, like 2010, I think this is important to go along with the amount of, like you said, power that these guys have now is unparalleled to any time in history. The rise of LeBron also coincided with the rise of, you know, social media and people all being interconnected all the time. Every single person on this planet, well, not every single person, you know what I mean. If you show them a picture of LeBron James or say his name, they've heard it before. Yep. That is something that not many people can ever say, period. It's good for the players. Again, not good for the execs, which is why it's been such an issue, which is why these players have had to fight for their rights. But it's what these players should have, man. Again, they're the product. They are the guys playing basketball. They should have a say in what's going to happen all the time, especially with how much money is on the line. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, this is an important time for a lot of people, like the league specifically. Like, this is like an inflection point. Like, this is a moment in time we're going to remember for, you know, years to come. So the decisions that are made now are going to influence a lot of what happens next. So a lot is on the line. So I think, like Amber, you're talking about like these guys and like having their voice. Like, I love these players having a voice and being able to express themselves. Mm-hmm. The only thing when it comes to people like Kyrie that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, it's almost like they're trying too hard. I know this is almost like my own rant. I think it's my turn to go off now. Like, oh, and Amber, you guys had your bubble. Like, I guess I'm up next. But like when it comes to Kyrie, it's like sometimes it's like he's super smart. Like, I know he has intellectual ability to make good points. But sometimes it's like the way he comes across, maybe it's the way he says it. I think that's my problem with the way he says it. Like, when you say something about
context, sometimes it's just hard to take in, especially across social media and videos and stuff. Context is just important. And I think since this quarantine and Kyrie hasn't been playing, he's been hurt, and he's had time to sit and reflect on, you know, what happened in Boston, what's happening in Brooklyn now with KD coming. I think he's had time to know that some of his stuff, like you said, has come off just the wrong way. And I'm glad he's showing everybody that he's not an idiot. I mean, yeah, he didn't stay at Duke for long, but you can't go to Duke and be an idiot. Come on.
Yeah. You're right, man.
I mean, Kyrie said, like, when he was talking about the earth is flat and stuff, he literally said he don't even believe it. He said
it was a YouTube rabbit hole. People just don't want to talk about that. Like, he not very far after said, oh yeah, you know how you go in the YouTube rabbit hole and it just keeps going.
Go up in there. But let me, like, guys, this is like some super insightful discussion. I love this. I hate that we have to like eventually come to an end on this. But I mean, overall, like, just looking at what's going on, I think like the topics you've hit all kind of point to the same thing. Like, this is an important time. This is a legendary time. So that's why, like, you know, being in this playoff run, being in this bubble, like, I've just tried to cherish every moment, just savor every moment, especially since Miami is in the freaking championship. Like, you know, Heat fans didn't see this coming. So this is just a special moment for LA. You know, it's had some deep meaning for them too. But in any case, I'm just glad to have had the opportunity to bring three people on. Like, this is my first time having three guests on the podcast before on a stream. So, like, I appreciate all y'all taking time
out. It went great.
It went fantastic. Like, we all had a rant time, except for Jason. I don't think. Did you have a rant, Jason? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know if I had a rant. I was just.
Just save it for another time.
You just jumped in where necessary to finish off your point. I got you, man. But thanks again, everybody, for taking the time to join into our live, to join into our episode. If you're listening, streaming, appreciate you. It's been a great time of discussion. But for each of these three people, they all have their platforms. They all have what they do. So it's in their spare time. They have a podcast. You know, Amber kills it with her podcast. you know, Owen, you got your thing going on here. Jason, you signed on to Unwrapped, and you're going to have your stuff coming up here. So what I'm going to do is, this is a live video on Twitter. I'm going to link their work. And then if you're listening, in the description, I'll put in their you know, places you can follow them on Twitter and everything, because I don't want to take up too much time having all of them plug all their stuff. Like, you know, they all have a lot going on. So, but I would definitely link all of their work down below if you guys want to check them out. But great having you guys on. It's been a fantastic time. As usual, you know, for Business Casual Basketball, you can follow us at BC Basketball 2. That's going to be Twitter and Instagram. And then, of course, bcbasketball.info online. And if you're listening to us, maybe Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, subscribe. That'd be much appreciated. So thanks again, everybody. We'll be back before you know it with more NBA analysis and breakdown. And as always, enjoy the rest of this NBA season. Hopefully we have another game left. But if this is it, thanks for joining us along for the ride. And we'll be back with some more NBA basketball for you real soon.